Why are you trying to persuade someone to become a Christian, particularly when they look at you and say, wait a minute, all major religions are equally valid because they basically teach the same thing? Or another of your friends might say, every religion has part of the spiritual truth, but are you telling me that your religion has the whole truth? And a third argument, you know, if you were born in India, you would be a different religion than you are today. In other words, your religion comes about because of the culture in which you were born and the historically conditioned events around your upbringing. How do we as Christians respond to those attacks against the Christian faith? That's what we're going to be talking about today on Law and Gospel on this Thursday, February the 7th. I'm Tom Baker, your host on AM 850 KFUO Inspirational Christian Radio. This, by the way, is a call-in program, which means you can call in even if you don't have a phone. Now, how do you do that? Well, you do it by the internet. The internet address is lawgospel@kfuo.org. But if you have a phone in the St. Louis area, it's 505-7850. And if you have a phone in North America, toll-free 1-800-730-2727. We're going to take an in-depth look at some of these arguments today in the first hour, different subjects in the second hour. But in this first hour, why don't we start with this one, that all major religions are equally valid and basically teach the same thing. Now, there's a couple of ways to argue against that particular attack on Christianity. The first thing you do is take a look at these people and say, oh, I see what you're saying. So religions that are like the Branch Davidians or religions requiring child sacrifice, they're not inferior to Christianity? See, that would stop the discussion right there. Obviously, all religions are not equally valid, nor do they basically teach the same thing. You could be under the power of a religious leader that tells you to drink poison Kool-Aid. And then there are those religions which are against a certain class of people, perhaps because of their gender, perhaps because of their race, perhaps because of their nationality. Now, normally when people say that, though, that they assert the equality of all religions, what they have in mind, and we'll give them this, major world faiths, not splinter sects. And when we speak of the major faiths, we're talking about Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity. Some people really believe that they all have the same God, and therefore the doctrines are insignificant. But somebody who says that just doesn't realize Buddhism doesn't even believe in a personal God. Judaism and Islam, they believe in a God who hold people accountable for their works and practices. And they kind of like to think that, God is a God of love. Stop and think about this. When somebody says to you, doctrines do not matter, what they are really saying is their doctrinal position. That's a doctrine in itself. That's their belief base. And it's also their belief base that all religions teach the same thing. And that's not true at all. That there are just basically two different kinds of religions. We've said this many a time here. The first is Christianity. The second is everything else. Everything else teaches what we call legalism. In fact, if you stop and think about what doctrine is, it's nothing more than just teaching what you believe. But most people think that when they're looking at the main religions, we all have the same kind of a God. He's a God that we like to think of as loving. He's a God who is a God of fairness and justice. He'll give you what you deserve. He helps you. He strengthens you to do the kinds of things that are necessary in order that you might be right with him. Except for Christianity. You see, anybody who says that all religions really teach about the same way about God, they really don't understand the Christian faith. It's one thing to criticize Christianity for what it truly believes. It's quite another thing to set it up as a straw man, include it with the rest of the religions, and then say, see, it's really no different than anyone else. Now, where do people get this idea? They may have gotten it from going to Christian services that talk about that your works are really going to make a difference as to whether you go to heaven or hell. Your personal works, or your thoughts, or your words. A lot of people hear from Christian churches that because sin is the problem, how do you resolve the problem? You become good. Unfortunately, there are even some mainline denominations, such as Roman Catholicism, that give that impression. Ask any Roman Catholic right now, the Pope who just died, and I'm talking about the Pope, is he in heaven or hell? And the answer will be, we don't know, because he could be still in purgatory. Don't say that there's no difference between the doctrines of various religions. Even if they had the same view of God as a loving God, a fair God, a God who wants you to be part of his family and he gives you strength and such, even if that were true, which it is not when it comes to Christianity, but even if it were true, that isn't really what divides religions so much, namely their view of God. What really divides religions, and here I'm not just speaking about Christianity from the rest, but all the religions are divided one from another as to the teaching as to how we get right with God. Some suggest it's through meditation, others through ceremonial laws, others through worship, others through giving offerings, others through giving sacrifices, others, and the list goes on and on and on, depending on what particular religion you're talking about. So even though some people have the impression that all religions teach the same thing, when you get down to the bottom line and you start examining what is their teaching about how we are right with God, you will find huge differences. But they fit primarily in one of two categories. They either fit in the category of law-oriented religions, or the only other religion, it's a gospel-oriented religion. And what is the difference? A law-oriented religion sees the problem in your behavior, and therefore the religion is set up in order to help you change your behavior, to improve your lifestyle, to become the real you. And insofar as you're able to do that, if there is a personal God, he's more pleased with you, he welcomes you into his family, and you are saved. You may not even have taken the first step in some of these religions, but you have to take some steps. This is an utter contrast to Christianity. Because what God recognizes is that since the fall of human beings into sin, no one is capable of being able to pull themselves up with their own bootstraps, no matter how much help God gives them, in order to be right with God. At times you may feel you're not right with God. Stop and think why you feel that way. Isn't it because you've done something that is wrong? When do you not feel right with someone else? It often occurs when there is a broken relationship. Somebody did something, said something, and the relationship is now broken. And in order to get back together, there has to be some kind of statement or something done in regard to what went wrong between the two people. And both sides have to do something for it. In Christianity, human beings are totally incapable of making themselves right with God. So God took it upon himself to do the task all by himself. Your contribution wasn't not just needed, it was impossible to provide a contribution. You're a poor, miserable sinner. It's like being in prison and you want to get out into the world to tell people your story, but you're unable to do that. So you use a substitute who goes around and talks about the facts of your case and try and get the judgment reversed. But you can't do it because you're stuck in prison. Oh, you can write a letter or two, but you're not allowed on the internet. You're not allowed on phone calls without people listening in. So it's really difficult to get anything really done. Many individuals have been freed from prison recently because of DNA. They have discovered that supposedly the crimes these people were said to have committed, they couldn't have committed because their DNA doesn't match other DNA that they have found at the crime scene, and were not able to figure things out, of course, until DNA come on the scene. It's like a fingerprint of a cell. Now, what did these people in prison do to get released? They did absolutely nothing. In fact, they may not even have heard that somebody, and there's a project out there to free prisoners on the basis of DNA evidence, individuals who were incarcerated and were wrongly imprisoned. And they may find out from the warden, well, it looks like you'll be getting out of jail. Getting out of jail? How's that possible? I have 16 more years on my sentence. Well, this group of scientists discovered that the DNA they found at the scene isn't your DNA. And you could not have possibly have been the person who did what was said to have been done. Isn't that interesting? You're out of prison without any contribution from you. Now, the only thing you've given maybe is your DNA. The only thing we give to God is our sin. And he does all the work. So this idea that all religions basically teach about the same God, that the best way to argue with that is to say, can you give me some doctrinal statements or teachings that you believe all religions teach? And you can't even say, well, one of them is they believe in a personal God. No, Buddhism does not. Well, another one says that you should always love people. No, Islam teaches that killing infidels, you're going to be rewarded for that. Finally, they don't really like Christianity. And here's a little secret. When you run into somebody who doesn't like Christianity, ask them this question. What is it about Christianity that you don't appreciate? And I'll guarantee you, 9 times out of 10, they will say something that you also don't appreciate it because it's not part of Christianity. How many times have we heard, well, what I don't like about Christianity, there's nothing but a bunch of hypocrites in the congregations. What? Last week we talked about what does a Christian look like. A Christian looks like a person who, on the one hand, says that he loves God and he wants to obey his will, and then he goes right out that week and disobeys it by thought, word, and deed each and every day. That's the definition of a Christian. Now, we can't add, but through contrition and repentance, God bestows upon that Christian the forgiveness of sins. But it's very difficult if you're at work and say there's an office and there's about 30 people in there. You can be working there for 3 months. And at the end of that 3 months, if somebody gave you a list of the names of everyone in the office, it would be difficult for you to write down whether or not these people are Christians or not. And that's a shame. We're not saying that you got to wear your Christianity on your sleeve. But in 3 months, one would have thought there would have been sufficient conversations going on in that office environment where your Christian faith would have come out somehow. When I was working at an automobile factory on the assembly line, I think it was within 3 days people found out that I was going to the seminary. Well, I had talked about some people. They said, are you going to be here a long time? I said, no, I'm just taking these 3 months off before I go back to the seminary, beginning the seminary. Oh, really? And before you know it, they were calling me the Reverend. Now, they were really making fun of me at times. But near the end of that 6 months that I spent there in preparation for going to the seminary, I remember a number of men coming to me on the sly, behind the scenes, asking me if I could help them with some problem they were having in their family, with their children, with their wife, maybe at work. And of course, I really wasn't able to. I kept telling them to go visit our pastor. I had a lot of confidence in him because I wasn't trained or equipped. But they just thought because I had decided to go to the seminary, I had seminary education. It simply isn't true in our particular denomination that you can feel the Holy Spirit calling you to the ministry and then the following week go up in the pulpit and start preaching. No, because what you're going to hear is just really superficial theology and, by and large, false teaching. Next time you meet a friend who isn't a Christian, say, what is it that you don't like about Christianity? Let them tell you, and then I'll bet you you'll be able to look at them and say, you know, I don't like that either if that was Christian. Oh, that's not Christian? No. You see, we have to distinguish between Christianity as the religion of Jesus Christ and Christians who often are ignorant of the doctrines of the Christian church and often in their behavior appear to contradict their love for Jesus Christ because we're poor, miserable sinners really deserving nothing but temporal and eternal punishment. You've got another problem here that people will attack Christianity on. This is argument number two. Each religion sees part of the spiritual truth, but nobody can see the whole truth. And sometimes they illustrate that point with the story of the blind man and the elephant. Several blind men were walking along. They came upon an elephant. And the elephant allowed them to touch him and feel him. And one blind man said, oh, this creature is long and flexible like a snake. He was holding the elephant's trunk. No, not at all. It is thick and round like a tree trunk, said a second blind man, feeling the elephant's leg. No, it is large and flat, said the third blind man, touching the elephant's side. See, each blind man could only feel a part of the animal, and none could really envision the entire elephant. So people who disagree with Christianity say, no, that's the way all religions of the world are. You can have a grasp of truth in a certain narrow area about spiritual reality, but nobody can claim to have a comprehensive vision of the whole truth. Well, the problem is the story is told from the point of view of someone who is not blind. How could you even know that each blind man only sees part of the elephant unless you claim to be able to see the whole elephant? Who is really arrogant? The person who declares that I am the way, the truth, and the life? Or the person who claims a kind of knowledge which is superior to that and say, no, you can't say that. There are other ways. Who really is the arrogant one? The arrogant is the one who thinks that he has some special knowledge, that he can therefore conclude that all religions just have a part of truth. Nobody has it all. Now, we need to be a little careful here because it is absolutely true that even the Bible doesn't have all truth in it, and yet it does. It does have all truth in the sense that anything that is written is true. It doesn't have all truth because guess what? Even if your Bible is 1,000 pages long, it's only a small fraction of a percent of what God knows. So obviously it doesn't have all truth. I mean, there are many questions that we have that aren't answered in the Bible. But that's not to say that what it has is all truth. So everything it has, all of what it has, is true. So the next time somebody says to you, how can you be so ignorant, arrogant in thinking that your religion has the truth and not just part of it? You can look back at them and say, how can you be so arrogant to claim a knowledge that what you are saying is correct? Can you see something beyond what we are seeing? Tell me, what part of our truth is in error? And what part of truth do we not have that somebody else has, that we need? The way to really attack Christianity on the part of many people is through ad hominem arguments, which simply means you're attacking the person and accusing him of being arrogant. In other words, you're judging his motives. When in reality, we can come right back and say, no, are you not the arrogant one who appears to possess a kind of knowledge where you are able to judge all religions, and yet you don't know by what ground you are judging them? When we get back from the break, we'll go to the third argument that is often heard, particularly in a pluralistic society like we have, that religious belief is really culturally and historically conditioned. So wherever you grew up, wherever you were born, that's why you are who you are. And if you'd like to phone me on any of this, maybe you have better arguments. 505-7850. Toll free, 1-800-730-2727. I'm Tom Baker. Love to talk to you, especially those of you who have some arguments against Christianity. And please stay with us through the break.
Are there items in your drawers and closets that you've not worn or touched since you put them there? Are you a pack rat? Hi, I'm Dr. Mark. This week, join my co-host Michelle Bauer and me on Life Revised as we discuss tips that can help you get organized, discover ways you can start clearing out some of the clutter in your life. Join us on Life Revised because life is a series of revisions.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson. How about a Sunday afternoon recipe of music and inspiration that'll boost you up? You'll hear artists like Steve Green, Sandy Patty, Twyla Paris, Stephen Curtis Chapman, many more. They will delight your musical palate and keep you coming back for more. Well, how about you? Won't you come back for just that? For more of Jubilation every Sunday beginning at 1:05 p.m. I'm Mark Hawkinson. Join me, won't you, on AM 850 KFUO.
I'm Dr. Bill Meyer with the James Dobson Family Minute. I think every parent struggles with what to do when a child says, I'm bored. My colleague Dr. James Dobson shares from his own personal experience.
When I was 13 years of age, we were in Alaska, and we spent a good part of the summer up there. And we were in kind of a wilderness setting, and I remember complaining about being bored, and my father said to me, are you kidding? He said, listen to me, the whole world is out there. get out there and make it happen. And I started taking hikes and doing all kinds of stuff, fishing and other things. And he was right. I was just sitting there waiting for somebody to make it happen for me when the whole world was out there.
You know, it's quite a revelation when a child learns about all the experiences available right outside their door. Just as Dr. Dobson's dad did, encourage your child to explore their world. We have some great ideas to get you started at focusonyourchild.com.
Here's a happy AM850 KFUO salute to our day sponsors. On this Thursday, February 7th, 2008, Rusty and Alvira Bacchus. Today's day sponsors have made a contribution to AM850 KFUO in celebration of their 15th wedding anniversary. Once again, we say thank you to Rusty and Alvira Bacchus of St. Louis, today's AM850 KFUO day sponsors, and best wishes from all of us at KFUO for a very happy anniversary.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson with an invitation for you to share some time with me each weekday from 12:05 to 1 p.m. on Moments of Assurance. You'll hear plenty of scripture applied to your life in a pleasing way, along with news items, music, prayers, humor, all put together in a Christ-centered package just for you. Join me for Moments of Assurance each weekday beginning at 12:05 p.m. right here on AM850 KFUO.
Do you believe that you can walk on water? No? How is it that Peter was able to walk on the water? And do you believe that if Peter had just done the right thing, he would have stayed on the water? Let's talk about Matthew 14, Jesus and Peter walking on the water, with Pastor Michael Walder of Good Shepherd Collinsville next time on our 10:05 Bible study.
The Bible study on AM850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
The Concordia Seminary Chorus, under the direction of the Reverend Henry Garricky, will visit Lutheran churches in Missouri, Michigan, Ontario, Canada, New York, New Jersey, Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Indiana on its 2008 spring tour. The chorus provides sacred concerts in the form of choral evening prayer that includes prayer, scripture readings, and congregational singing. Included in the itinerary, Lord of Life Lutheran Church in Chesterfield on February 10th at 3 p.m. and Emmanuel Lutheran Church in St. Charles on March 9th.
One of the ways secularists are trying to get religious thought outside of the naked square and outside of politics is to condemn religion. So they use certain arguments, we've looked at them, that, well, all major religions are valid and basically they teach the same thing. We answered that. Or each religion is just part of a spiritual truth, but nobody can talk about the whole truth. And we're going to go to another argument, but first of all, our phone number is 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727, toll free. Let's begin with Brian in St. Louis. Hi, Brian.
Hi. One of the arguments that you hear a lot, that people say they can't believe in God or Jesus because they don't have a belief in the supernatural. And the thing I find really funny about that is that if you look at all the major leading physicists who talk about how the universe came to be, they said that all of them now say it did have a beginning. Now, if it had a beginning, it had to come out of something. And if nature is just the universe and everything it's made up of it, which is all the raw material of science, then the thing that it came out of had to be supernatural.
Yes. People thought that at the time of the Enlightenment, when reason and science were coming on the forefront, that pretty soon religion would no longer be necessary because religion was there to explain the unexplainable, but here comes science to explain it. And we found out that many scientists are very religious, so what they thought was going to happen just doesn't happen.
Well, it's the idea that some scientists would say, you know, who I guess were atheists, would say that, well, the universe came out of nothing. Well, isn't that what a miracle does? It seems to come from nowhere. I mean, I don't see how you distinguish between the two. I mean, if the universe had to come out of something, nature had to come out of something. It couldn't come out of itself. It had to come out of something else. I find that such a
persuasive
persuasive argument in favor of a supernatural understanding of the origin of the universe, which means everything that's in it, including us. And I've always wondered why people have such a problem understanding that. Science does not explain supernatural things. It can't, and it never will, I don't think.
Because it's out of their purview. The very fact, listen to the word, supernatural.
Right, outside of nature.
It's outside of nature, and science has decided to agree that they're only going to be studying within nature, within the laws of nature, with the observable, with what they
right.
can touch, what they can see, what they can feel, what they can hear. It is true that science can neither prove or disprove miracles, but because it can't, doesn't mean that they don't exist outside of the purview of science. That
right.
doesn't follow at all logically.
Yeah, what's that famous phrase? Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence.
Excellent.
Could I ask you one last thing?
Yes, sir,
Brian.
I think
one time you mentioned that theology is the art of making distinctions, and you said that in terms of your understanding of it, there are like four or five people, you said, who were really outstanding theologians. I was wondering who you were thinking of.
Well, I would say there's probably more than four or five in theology, but in my particular area that I love so much, like the area of law and gospel, I think C.F.W. Walther's distinctions that he made as to how pastors are continually messing up law and gospel, and that, of course, in the proper distinction between law and gospel, a series of lectures he gave in the mid-1800s, I think that is just really tremendous. So there would be people like that. I'm just fascinated by this pastor Dathenus from the 16th century who wrote letters to Elizabeth, one of his members, and all the things I talk about law and gospel, they're basically found in that little book of letters.
In fact, I'm going to give that book to somebody because I read it myself and it was really magnificent.
Isn't it? I mean, I was trying to find, there wasn't that much I could even criticize, and he's not even Lutheran.
It's so concise, though. I mean, like you say, it's, what, about 100 pages?
Yes.
And, wow, how much material is in there to give you a think about? It's just
years. Did a PowerPoint presentation on it, and my, I couldn't believe it goes about 2 hours. You can almost read the book. But I was trying to make the point how what he was doing is what every person should be doing in applying the law and applying the gospel, not just talking about it. So Petrus Dathenus, Dathenus, what a marvelous. And by the way, people can go to lawgospel.com and order that book because we do sell it on the website. But there are certain professors I have had that have given great insight into law and gospel where you go to their class and you're just saying, aha, aha, all the way through the class. We have some have been on the radio here, Norman Nagel, for example.
I was going to mention him.
Oh, really?
I heard him the other day, and it was really
isn't that? He's just on a little different level.
Yeah. It's a proclamation with him. You really feel it coming from a different place.
Yeah, it really is. I think Martin Luther definitely had that, obviously. You read the commentaries that he wrote on the books of the Bible, and I like the Galatians or the Romans commentary, and it is so deep.
On the phone. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we're all on the phone. There are not that many authors today, though, yet, that are putting out some what I would consider in-depth kinds of things. There's a lot who are doing philosophy, but go to the One-Way Bookshop and take a look at all the books that are being sold a lot of, and you won't see anybody talking about or writing about what we have here on AM 850 KFUO, and I have yet to understand why that's happening.
Well, I know. I guess, thank you at least that you're doing it, though, because this program's a great benefit, I think, to put that on gospel, definition, giving people something to really interpret the scripture with well.
Well, I appreciate that, and it's something that when I was at the seminary, because of the kinds of profs, we hardly even talked about this. And with the newer props, it's much more of a big thing. And one can see a lot of the heresies from the church come about because simply law and gospel is not being properly distinguished.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for all your effort.
Well, thank you, Brian, and keep listening. That was Brian in St. Louis. If any of you have a question, 505-7850, or if you have a comment, 1-800-730-2727, or if you have something to write, lawgospel@kfuo.org. Your friend, who is not a Christian, says in the midst of your attempting to convert him, it is arrogant to insist your religion is right and to try and convert me to it. In fact, we just read, I think about 3 days ago, was it, about this Episcopalian priestess who had a service with Hindus, or Buddhists, was it? One of the two. And she apologized for the attempts on the part of Christians to convert these people to Christianity. I mean, this is Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis. It is one of the finest books that you can read as to how the devil really gets in the minds of Christians, how tricky he is, how deceptive he is. You see, it sounds so loving. Please ask for your forgiveness because we were telling you that Christianity is better than your religion. But in reality, it's the work of the devil. You see, if one stops and just steps back and listens to that person telling us that it is arrogant to insist our religion is right and to convert others to it, that means that that person has a higher sense of knowledge and analysis than we have. And so is he not the one who is being arrogant in claiming that his view is superior to ours? Some say that, well, it's really unimportant that we would say something like that. One individual once said this, and I think this is really true. The only way you can judge a religion is on the basis of another religion. Now stop and think about that. Those who say it's arrogant for you to say that you have the only religion and try to convert me, that they don't have any evidence for that at all. It's just their opinion. And it's arrogant for them to say that because they're saying that they are superior in knowledge to us. But the way I like coming back, I would say, okay, you're saying it's arrogant for me to say what I am saying, then judge me on the basis of any other religion. Where does another religion have something superior to Christianity? Now, I'll tell you what they'll say. They'll say, well, it makes other religions make it easier to be one with God through meditation and contemplation. Now, see, the only reason they would say that is because they believe that Christianity is a religion of works. And therefore, it's really tough to be a Christian. That's why they look around and apparently see so many people who aren't making it. When in reality, that is what a Christian is. It is somebody who loves the Lord Jesus Christ, desires to follow his will, attempts to do so, but rarely succeeds. In fact, never perfectly succeeds because of the old Adam within every one of us. You see, who is more narrow? Think of it in this way. Is it more narrow to claim that one religion is correct? Or is it more narrow to claim that one way to think about all religions is that they are all right? I don't think it's a question of narrowness. We are all exclusive in our beliefs about religion, but just in different ways. The popular books put out by atheists right now fall into that trap. They attack Christianity not on the basis of real thinking and real argumentation, but on the basis of how foolish it is to believe in a God. Well, where did they get that information from? What are they looking to figure out that what we're saying is wrong? They must have some source. And of course, their source is none other than the devil himself. He's their outside source that has drove them to so dislike the Christian faith that they say things that are really not at all persuasive for anyone within Christianity to decide, well, I'm going to leave this. Boy, you sure made your case. They're unable to make their case. Because somehow they're finding truth somewhere. And wherever that truth is from shows that probably there's got to be a God. The fact that you go outside of yourself to find evidence for there not being a God probably proves there is a God, because you got to go outside of yourself. You see, either you're a secularist and who believes in evolution, namely survival of the fittest. And if that's the case, then you can really say anything you want about anything and give no proof at all, because you've got the right to do that. You're just another creature among a whole mass of creatures, and there is no morality, there's no ethics. Well, why is it wrong to rob a bank? It's only wrong because the majority of people have decided it's wrong. If the majority of people thought it wasn't wrong, then we could go ahead and rob banks. It's like saying in the ethical area, most people would agree that in essence, one needs to obey his parents. But why is that? You see, in the animal kingdom, kids always disobeying their parents. Well, where's this information coming from so people can make moral decisions? It's not rational. Not if you look at the natural world. I mean, you have spiders that eat up their mates. You've got all kinds of horrible things in the natural world going on. And people are trying to save such people. So these arguments need to be coming from somewhere. And in my opinion, that's the easiest way to get people to understand that what they're saying is inappropriate. Just to show them that, where did you get that information from? Now, who told you about it? I'm Tom Baker, and our numbers here, in case you'd like to phone up, are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address at lawgospel@kfuo.org. Let's go talk to James. Hi, James.
Hello, Pastor.
Hi.
I'd like you to take a look at Ezra chapter 4, verses 1 through 5, in regards to what you're talking about today. But I'd also like to ask you, are there valid arguments against Christianity in the role that it played in colonization? Have you heard the story of, I think it was Gandhi, who, as an aristocrat, had studied all of the religions, and he had decided that he wanted to be a Christian. And when he went to the Christian church, and I don't know if it was a Methodist or a Presbyterian church, I can't remember now,
uh-huh.
Because of the racist tendencies of the church, they would not confirm him or let him join the church. And from there, he became a Hindu, and, you know, the rest is history, how he used his Hinduism and I guess his vile poverty to help the untouchables in his life.
And so you're saying they were racist?
He said that they were racist.
Yeah, okay.
That they would not do that. And there is an argument against how Christianity is used in colonization. And I was wondering if you thought that was a valid argument. But my actual question is out of Ezra chapter 4, if you have time to take a look at that. And those Christians that are those people that are there are saying that they would like to help build the temple since they also worship the same God as Ezra and have sacrificed to him. And I was wondering, what's your comment on that?
In other words, these foreigners were coming to Zerubbabel and company asking to help build the temple.
Well, they were not foreigners. They were actually there. They were people that were placed there also by a Persian king, and they had, I guess they were the Samaritans or their descendants, and they also worshipped the same God, and they wanted to help now that Ezra and his party was coming back.
They were the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin, according to verse 1.
I guess you would say that as the books were written, they were written as adversaries, but they may have been adversaries in the land, but they worshiped the same God.
Well, then why in verse 4 did they try to discourage the people of Judah and gave them all kinds of trouble while the building was going on? They even hired lawyers against them to frustrate their purpose.
I would think it's because of their being turned away. I think that...
Now, do you think they should not have been turned away?
If they worshiped the same God and they wanted to help build the temple, I do think they should have. I don't know.
Well, see, they did have a commandment from King Cyrus, the king of Persia, who commanded them in verse 3 that they were the ones to do that. And so by bringing in these other people, they would have been breaking that commandment, that law.
The commandment of Cyrus or the commandment of God?
Of King Cyrus.
Okay. The commandment of King Cyrus actually told that as he told them that they could go back, was that other people in the land should give them goods and to help them in the building of the temple. So I don't know if when the people who wrote these scrolls, if they have a certain, what you call, artistic or...
Well, how does this tie into arguments against Christianity? I'm still lost a little bit here.
In regards to the Ezra chapter or in regards to the valid argument, there were two questions. The valid argument against Christianity used in colonization, I think that there are some valid arguments how... Christian missionaries would aid in colonization and somehow come in first with Christianity, and then the colonizers would come in. It's kind of like bringing a Bible and a sword. And then on the question out of the Bible text here, it seems as if these Zerubbabel. That they're being very exclusive, Pastor.
Well, I think they're...
And not letting these people who actually worship the same God as them, who are Samaritans, who Jesus, in the New Testament, said a lot of things about Samaritans.
Okay, I'll respond to some of that, James. The main point, though, this is Old Testament books, where the ceremonial laws did take precedent over any of the civil laws at the time. And if you read carefully the building of the temple as to who was to do it, back in Leviticus, for example, and this was a rebuilding of the temple, then the Gentiles, of course, the women were kept outside the main court. So I can understand why Zerubbabel is following the dictates of God in the proper way of building the temple. The reason we don't do that today is that we are no longer living under the ceremonial laws. That is to say that God, by means of the ceremonial laws, were showing that, boy, there's still a problem in getting right with God. Certain people can't come into the main part of the temple. We need to keep doing these ceremonial laws. Once Christ has come and broken down that barrier, then we're able to do things. And I'm sure today it really doesn't matter who's building our church in Kyrgyzstan, for example. Bishkek, which is the capital of Kyrgyzstan, a Muslim country, former republic of the USSR, we're erecting right now, about halfway through, a $250,000 Lutheran cathedral. and the Muslim government has given us permission to do that. And I'm quite sure that a lot of Muslims are involved in the constructing of that cathedral. And that doesn't bother us because we are no longer under the ceremonial laws, if that was the reason why Zerubbabel was telling these people they couldn't help out. He seemed to understand that they weren't really in their heart wanting to do this, because as soon as he refused to let them do that, they began trying to discourage the people of Judah in rebuilding the temple and even trouble them in their building, just like people do today. You send inspectors over, hire lawyers to try and stop something you don't want to happen. And so these were not probably the kinds of individuals you'd want in sharing in the building at that time. Their attitude became clear afterwards, and perhaps Zerubbabel had a right view ahead of time. But the text, in my view, isn't really that clear as to whether or not God's will was that these people should or shouldn't help in the building of the temple or rebuilding of the temple. So that would be my answer there, because that's what the text itself says, that Zerubbabel is going to be pretty strong about who God and then King Cyrus said ought to be doing the building of the temple. Remember, it was the Jews that asked Cyrus that they could return and do the kind of work they were doing. And he put it into play. He allowed it to happen. And he even helped them to do that. In our next hour, we're going to be moving to a little different subject. But if you're at all interested in talking about this one for a few minutes, we could at 505-7850 or toll free at 1-800-730-2727. We're at the end of the first hour on this Thursday. Boy, Thursday already. February the 7th, 08. I'm Tom Baker, your host. And as indicated, your numbers that you can call in the St. Louis area, 505-7850. Toll free, 1-800-730-2727. And please stay with us through the break.
Listen to Law and Gospel with Tom Baker, Monday through Friday at 1:05 p.m. on AM 850 KFUO. You can write Pastor Tom at AM 850 KFUO, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or at this email address, lawgospel@lawgospel.com.